Hello and welcome to Talking Trading. I'm Caroline Stephen. It's great to have you join us. Today we speak to Wayne Berry, the CEO of Top Gun Business Academy. In one of my favourite interviews this year, Wayne talks about how to develop the tools and the attitude necessary for success. A passionate aviator, Wayne has walked through the fire to come out the other side and share his wisdom. Louise Bedford also talks about attitude in Mind Power when she tells us to change how we think about money to attract real wealth in our lives. But first up, here's the news for the week ending 21st of November with Aaron Lynch. Aaron Lynch, hello and welcome.
Good morning, Caroline. How are you?
How did the US markets close last week?
Well, the US markets, in the case of the two major indexes, the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones, they actually closed in record high territory. So a little bit of a broken record on those markets, but they are pushing into brand new fresh highs. And essentially, they jumped on the news that the Chinese essentially political system and financial system lowered interest rates, which was a little bit of a shot in the arm for that economy, but it was certainly out of the blue.
What were the main features of the close?
Well, look, what I found interesting was that the Dow Jones, for example, gapped up on the open, but then managed to give back some of those gains throughout the session. So whilst it was a positive session, it certainly did close with a little bit of weakness. The S&P 500 also was the same. So early on, a lot of buoyant bulls driving into the market, but the markets did push to significant fresh highs, but then settled back down within their ranges, probably to about the midway point. And I guess the most definitive pattern, I guess, that I'm taking away is that I watch a lot of divergence between markets or indexes like the Dow Jones, the S&P, and the two others that are worthwhile looking at is the Russell 2000 and the NASDAQ. Now, they tend to give us some slightly different exposure to different parts of the US economy. So the Russell 2000 gapped significantly on the open, climbed very high, but managed to close in, say, the bottom 20% of its range. So really didn't gain much compared to Thursday's trading session. And the NASDAQ as well, being one of those markets that has been a stunning performer since the GFC, pretty much closed where it opened. So there's a little bit of divergence there between what the S&P and the Dow Jones are telling us and the NASDAQ and the Russell. So that could indicate a little bit of weakness in some of the other parts of the US economy. So that was of great interest to me with the closes on Friday.
Is the market overbought?
The market, I think, is tired, and therefore I think it's in a situation where we need to be careful about initiating new positions. There's obviously markets are reacting very, spontaneously to news items like, you know, this central bank decision in China. But once the market tends to digest that, they may come to the conclusion that, yeah, the market isn't as strong, or maybe it's a little bit tired. So if I look at the NASDAQ and the S&P, Dow and Russell, they pretty much had a sideways week other than the Friday jump, which we saw. I think as the market digests that, we may not see as much strength coming through in the week ahead. So I'm certainly cautious that the market is getting into overbought territory.
So Aaron, how did the Australian markets look last week?
Well, the Australian markets last week were, you know, decidedly sick. We had 5 days of down days in a row, and therefore we've seen a bit of a divergence between a lot of these global markets. You know, Europe, some of the Asian markets, particularly the American markets, have been looking good. We've obviously been moving in the other direction. So the question now begs, are we a leading indicator? Are we doing something that the rest of the world's going to catch up to, or are we about to turn around and head higher again and catch up with the global markets? But certainly the patterns in the Australian market were very heavily influenced by commodity prices and just a general concern about our economic, I guess, outlook going forward into 2015.
Okay, so let's talk about patterns in the chart. What were they?
Well, look, I'm looking at a lot of the current Australian market retracements and looking particularly at the sectors. So one of the, I guess, major technical analysis techniques many people use is percentage retracements and extensions. So looking at the broad Australian market, we've actually retraced 50% of the October to November move, and that can often be regarded as a bit of an area to watch for support and resistance. And I'm also watching for, I guess, the overall ranges in terms of whether they're expanding or contracting, and we tend to do that on, you know, daily, weekly and even monthly considerations. But there's some markets that have been producing things like double tops and double bottoms. Natural gas is one of those markets that I'm watching very closely. It's got a big double top formation on it currently in terms of commodities. But in terms of the Australian market, I'm looking at those percentage pullbacks. So for example, the financials have pulled back 50%. The energy markets pulled back about 50%. The healthcare markets pulled back about 37.5%. Same with the industrials. So any of those that are sort of holding above 50%, I'll be looking to see whether support comes through to those this week. If they fall underneath those 50% levels, then we may see a greater period of downside potential. So a big week for the Australian market.
What opportunities are you looking at this week?
For me, the energy sector. Traditionally, this time of year, particularly November and December, they are the two most, cyclically or seasonally active periods of the market in terms of bottoms. If you go back and study the history of crude and Brent and natural gas and those sorts of markets, we do tend to see quite a lot of lows form. Now, not surprising, it correlates to Northern Hemisphere winters. And so I'd be looking for some potential US dollar weakness. That looks a little bit overbought at the moment, and a potential recovery in some of the energy spaces. So that's what I'll be focused on this week, and certainly some of the other soft commodities as well.
And apart from being good to your mother, advice to traders this week?
Well, always be good to your mother. The other one we talk about is working hard. Coming into this end of year, I guess the advice that I tend to look at, particularly at this time of the year, is stay focused. Often we talk about Christmas rallies in equity markets, and that's been particularly kind to me over the years, looking at seasonal trades in terms of energy markets. But look, what we tend to find is that I know my own life gets a bit busy this time of year, and we tend to, as traders, take the foot off the pedal, as most people do in their professional lives towards the end of the year. But I tend to find December and January can be excellent months in terms of profitability. So what I tend to say to people at this time of year is keep your eyes on the prize, focus on your work, keep good routines, and look for good opportunities, because there's often a lot around this time of year that build the start of the year and get you off in the right way. It's nothing like having paid for Christmas with some trades before Christmas.
Aaron Lynch, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Caroline.
Most traders act like a little kid in the markets. They don't know that a great trading plan is their secret weapon.
Isn't it time you grew the f*** up? Register on tradinggame.com.au and grab our free trading plan template. It's a sign of being a mature trader.
And now Mind Power with Louise Bedford.
I guarantee you this, change your views towards money and what it means to you, and you'll change your results as a trader. When we realise that money is just a way of keeping score, and it's nothing more than a tool, we detach from its power over us. We stop its control over our thoughts and our actions. Plus, ironically, this attitude paves the way for more of it to enter our lives. Some of the most greedy, money-hungry people I've ever met barely had any of the stuff. However, some of the most generous, philanthropic people who don't continually talk about their lack of money are the most financially wealthy people on the planet. So, which comes first? The attitude about money or the money itself? Having trained hundreds of successful traders and seen them at every stage of their wealth development, I can definitely answer this one. The attitude towards money comes first. The way a trader thinks always precedes their actual share trading results. In reality, some rich people are poor and some poor people are rich. It's just a matter of time until reality catches up with their mindset.
Wayne Berry is the CEO and founder of Top Gun Business Academy. He's taught tens of thousands of business graduates. He's authored 5 books on business and sales, and he's a highly sought-after conference speaker. With a love for aviation, Wayne has walked through having only 2 weeks to live. He has a life and a vision many people would envy. We're delighted to speak with him now about the attitude of success. Wayne Berry, hello and welcome to Talking Trading.
Yeah, good to be on the show with you.
Let's talk about attitude and mindset. How important is attitude and mindset to the development of success in anything?
Well, look, I'm glad you said anything, because it is so true. It is in anything. Mindset is just so important. 80%, I believe, of our success in life is our attitude. It all comes down to attitude. See, knowing what to do isn't enough. Motivation to actually take some action is often the missing ingredient with people, and it all comes down to mindset. Having the right why do's is perhaps even more important than knowing how to do something. So, yeah, the mindset, I often say our outer world will always be a reflection of our inner world. So whatever we hold in our mind, we tend to create in our outer world. And yes, if we have a positive look on life, and we believe that great things are going to happen to us, indeed, we will create those great things because that is our underlying belief.
So how can we develop a great attitude and maintain our motivation when things are going wrong?
Well, look, I think the best motivation is success. It's often said nothing breeds success like success, and I think that's true. And you've got to look at, well, how do we create success in our life? And it's our actions that actually create our success. So I think successful people do things, take action, regardless of how they feel, while average people are waiting around until they feel like taking action. So there's a big difference there. I think just knowing that if you take some action, no matter how small it might be, that moves you towards your goal, you're going to feel better. It's like a feedback loop. When we take some action and we do what we know we should do, we feel terrific. Every time we don't take action and we don't do what we know we should do, it actually undermines our self-esteem, undermines our confidence, and chips away at us and makes us feel pretty bad. So I think action is one of the key things that we can do to develop and create a good attitude. And also things like being selective about who we spend our time with. You know, sometimes we can hang around with people who aren't exactly motivated, aren't exactly achieving. And I don't say cut out, you know, your friends, but be very selective about who you hang around with. Also, be careful about what you read. Be selective about what you read, what you listen to, and what you watch. Be sure that you're feeding your mind positive thoughts every day, not negative thoughts. And there's a lot of negativity out there in the press, on the radio, on television. So be very, very careful about what you let into your mind. I think that's important. Be sure you feed your mind good, positive stuff.
So why do you think some people can are very able to start with very good intentions, but then they fail to follow through and achieve their goals?
Okay, look, I think there are a number of things, and it comes down to lack. Lack of the right mindset when they're getting started. Lack of the right skills to achieve their goals. Often lack of clearly defined goals as well. They just don't have their goals clearly defined. And something that I think is also really important is a lack of a good coach or mentor. I mean, the fact of the matter is there are people out there who have achieved the sort of goals that we wish to achieve. There are people out there who know how to do it. Why wouldn't we get around people like that and learn from them, get advice from them? And if you're lucky enough, find someone who can actually coach you and mentor you. I think that's one of the good things about being able to keep on track, or how to keep on track. And people who don't achieve their goals and they start with good intentions, I think they lack in those key areas.
We all experience setbacks. We all experience challenges in life. Why do you think it is that some people, that we were just talking about this, why do you think some people can get permanently derailed while other people seem to bounce back and keep fighting?
Look, again, I think it's belief in yourself, and it is having the right mindset. It's brightness of the future. Now, I've had some ups and downs in my life, some times of adversity. In fact, when I say it's good to be here, it's really good to be anywhere, because a number of years ago I was told I only had a couple of weeks to live, and that kind of changes your perspective on life. So I know what I'm talking about when I come from this perspective of, you know, how to get through times of adversity. But I think having brightness of the future, having a long-term goal, particularly a goal that involves helping other people, people other than ourselves, because often we're motivated, much, much more motivated at the thought of helping other people, our friends, our family, our loved ones. And I've got to admit that during my really tough time, one thing I had in my mind was I cannot let my children be without me. I need to be there as they grow and as they develop. So that was one of the major motivations in keeping my mind right going through those really tough times. Also, I think having a written plan. I mean, one of the things that I did when I went through, and I've been through times of adversity many times in my life, is I sit down and I write out my plan to make sure that I actually have a plan, and then I set to take action on the plan. Then I find I'm just too busy to worry about any negativity, and I just move forward. And I think some people who don't bounce back and are derailed, they just don't have the brightness of the future, they don't have the goals, and they don't have the plan.
Are they in self-pity?
I think so very often, and also they're in a state of lay blame. In other words, back a number of years ago when I had a disaster in my business, the airline stopped flying and I was in the seminar business and my business ground to a halt, I found myself blaming the airlines, blaming the government, blaming my accountant for not warning me that something like this could happen in my business. I had a list of people and circumstances I was blaming for what had happened to me. Big problem, I wasn't on my own list. And that for me is a major learning experience. I think blaming other people for where we're at in our life is a major, major mistake to make. So avoiding blaming other people and taking 100% responsibility for where we're at is the first step towards moving forward. Because once we realize that it's very silly to wait for someone else to come along and rescue us and help us, that we must take responsibility for where we're at. Once we do that, we can also take responsibility for where we wish to be, and then we can move forward. So many people are in pity and blame and waiting for somebody to come along and solve their problems. I've got news for you. They're not coming. They're just not coming. It's a do-it-for-ourself project, I think, life.
So where's the boundary between taking responsibility and beating up on yourself?
Well, I just think beating up on yourself is a complete waste of time. When things happen, it's avoiding the language of blame as well. It's when something happens to us, it's a matter of saying, well, okay, interesting learning experience. How will I avoid that happening in the future? It is now my responsibility to get myself out of this. What shall I do? Sit down, write out a plan and move on. Just get out of self-pity, get out of worry. You know, I've got a philosophy around worry too. The question with worry is if something is challenging you, you ask yourself the question, if I really put a lot of mental concentration in on this and worry about it a lot, will it change it? Will it improve it? If the answer is yes, then, hey, sit down, do some major brainstorming. I won't call it worrying, but do some major brainstorming, focus on it, and then take some action. If the answer alternatively is, no, all the worry in the world about this is not going to change anything, then don't do it. It sounds simple. It sounds simple, but it's very disciplined. For example, you know, if you've got a loved one in our life who's messing up their life, for example, in our opinion, they're messing up their life, and we can't influence them. We've done our very best to influence them. The fact of the matter is that continuing to worry about that is not going to change anything. We can either take action or not. And if we've taken all the action that we can take, well, I think in the end we need to say, there's nothing more I can do about that. Let's get on and do some more positive stuff. Let's not focus on the negative stuff. Let's not do any worry. It's a complete waste of time.
Suggestions or a formula around goal setting and goal achievement?
Well, I teach a process called treasure mapping, and treasure mapping is a visual representation of what we want. And it starts, I used to do it years ago, I used to say, sit down with a bunch of magazines, cut out the pictures that attract us, stick them on a great big sheet of paper. These days I say, just even flick through looking for images on the internet. You know, go to Google Images and type in a subject that has of interest to you and print out some images. Put them all still on a graphic representation, put them on a big sheet of paper, and very often it's our unconscious mind that is selecting things that we want to draw into our life. So do treasure mapping. It's very creative and, as I say, it's very often an unconscious process. Step number two, define the goals and the time frame. So get really clear on what your goals are, write them down, put a time frame. Some of them will be short term, 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, 5 year, 10 years, 15 years, whatever. Once you've done that, ask, what prevents me from achieving this goal? And see if you can clarify what is it that prevents me. Now, what I've often found is that the answer comes back to me, well, there's nothing really. Hence, you know, there are no obstacles. Number four, start with the end in mind. In other words, place yourself into the future as if you've achieved the goal and then work backwards and say, well, okay, I achieved this goal. Here I am. Here I am standing on the deck of this luxury yacht that I have purchased and I own, and it's now on the Whitsundays. How did I get here? Well, I guess I bought the boat. Now, how did I buy the boat? Well, I guess I found someone to buy it from. And work your way all the way back to the beginning. So begin at the end and work backwards. So I often say to people who want to write a book, well, imagine that you've got the book in your hand. How did you get the book in your hand? And work back step by step by step, and then you've got a plan for moving forward. That's often easier than beginning and looking way down the track and saying, I'm going to achieve that goal. What's the plan? When you look down the track and it's like 2 or 3 years away, you think, well, that's a really long way to go. Oh, I don't know, I'll even bother starting. But if you assume you're there, then just think, how did I get there? And work backwards.
Final
pieces of advice. I think the main thing missing in most people's life is action. Taking massive action. So many people know what they should do, they simply don't do it. So I would say get a good plan, take massive immediate action. Some people say, you know, what if you're on the wrong track? You'll find out sooner and, you know, course correct and do it again. And I guess in my life, what I do is constantly find a good idea, take massive action, find another good idea, massive action, and that tends to move us forward in the direction of our goals.
A quick question for our male listeners. Have you really been flying jets for 35 years?
Ah, no, not flying jets. I just like to put the picture there with the jets. No, look, I have flown jets, but no, I've been flying since my early 20s. It was one of my ambitions I had to become a private pilot. And talk about mindset. In school, my teachers told me I was too stupid, basically. I didn't understand math, science. I would never, ever be a pilot. Don't bother even thinking about it. So instead of applying to the airlines, I decided to become a pilot myself. Bought an airplane before I could actually fly it. That's called commitment. And then took lessons and learned how to fly. So aviation's a wonderful thing. It's a good example of moving outside of your comfort zone and doing something that's really challenging. And I certainly love doing things that are challenging.
Wayne Berry, what an inspirational note to leave on. Thank you very much for your time.
Great talking with you.
And that's all we have for you today, guys. I'd like to thank our contributors, Aaron Lynch, Wayne Berry and Louise Bedford. Stay tuned next week to hear property investor Na Nguyen on goal setting. I'm Caroline Stephen, and on behalf of the team, thanks for your company. Look forward to you next time.
Talking Trading is sponsored by tradinggame.com.au and The Mentor Program. The Mentor Program has been running continuously since the year 2000 and is a 6-month repeat for free course run by Chris Tate and Louise Bedford. Make sure you're registered on tradinggame.com.au to hear more.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Before acting on any information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.